Program is rated PG-13. Parental guidance is advised. Hey, good evening, Two Seekers. I just had to do that one time. Matter of fact, I think I'm going to do that every night. Why not? Yeah, this is a PG-13 show. Right? So, welcome to Friday night. How you doing? Are you in the Christmas spirit yet? Boy, I am. Yes. Well, winter solstice. Well, Christmas. I mentioned last night, I was explaining to Molly last night when she was going to sleep the overlap between winter solstice season and Christmas, and how the early Christians decided that, you know, they would just co-opt this Celtic slash pagan holiday, been around for a long time, and why the winter solstice was celebrated the way it was celebrated, with the lights and the dancing and the parties and gay apparel and so on and so forth and the bonfires and... So she laid there and listened, and tonight she asked me to tell her that again. So I told her the whole thing again. And then she sat up in bed and looked at me, and she said, Daddy, I have something to tell you. And I said, what's that? Christmas is about the birth of Jesus. All right. Yeah, so I said, you know, you're right. That's what Christmas is about. I'm just trying to explain to you, deck the halls with Boston Charlie, Walla Walla Wash, in Kalamazoo. You know, just trying to explain that part of it. Hey, did you hear about this guy, Cecil Bothwell, or Bothwell? I guess it's Bothwell. He was just elected to the city council in Asheville, North Carolina, which is not very far from here. I have friends that live in Asheville. It's just across a few of the lower Appalachian Mountains that you have to cross over to get from Metro Atlanta to North Carolina. And beautiful. Asheville, North Carolina is beautiful. That's where, what's his name, the big industrialist that built the big mansion up there, Biltmore. Who was that? Vanderbilt. You know, one of the real rapacious capitalists. You look at that place, you look at Biltmore. I don't know if you all get commercials about traveling to Biltmore in other parts of the country, but down here, it's, you know, you go there for Christmas, I guess, to look. You go through Biltmore, and it has, like, I don't know, 150 rooms, and it's built like a French mansion. I think it's modeled on French aristocracy, or modeled on the, not the Louvre, but... aristocratic French Louis XIV style mansion, and it's just hundreds of rooms, and that's not exaggerating. All right, maybe 100, 150. But it is an example of wretched excess beyond belief. It makes the Hearst Castle in California look like an outhouse, frankly. Sorry, no offense to California. But Asheville is really a pretty city. It's up in the Blue Ridge Mountains, which are part of the Appalachian Mountains. It's really cool up there, and a lot of artists have moved up there, a lot of writers, a lot of people who just couldn't handle any longer the craziness of, say, Atlanta or Charlotte or Nashville or Cincinnati or wherever, and just decided to migrate to Asheville, North Carolina. Well, Cecil Bothwell got elected to city councilman. He ran on the platform. He believes in ending the death penalty, conserving water, reforming government. You can see how he would win. Most people look at North Carolina. Well, that's part of the South. North Carolina is kind of a purple state anyway, but Asheville is totally blue. But there's a fly in the ointment here. Cecil Bothwell does not believe in God. He said he's 59 years old. He said, quote, "The question of whether or not God exists is not particularly interesting to me, and it's certainly not relevant to public office. But the Republicans, the conservatives in Asheville are raising a great big stink now, threatening to take the city to court for swearing him in, even though the state's antiquated requirement that office holders believe in God is unenforceable because it violates U.S. Constitution. But this shows the dumbassery of conservatives, of Republicans. Yeah, North Carolina still has on its books this. The North Carolina Constitution disqualifies office holders, quote, who shall deny the being of Almighty God, end quote. The provision was included when the state constitution was drafted in 1868, and it wasn't revised when North Carolina amended its constitution in 1971. So one of the people threatening to file a lawsuit is this guy named H.K. Edgerton. He said, my father was a Baptist minister. I'm a Christian man. I have problems with people who don't believe in God. He is a former president of the NAACP and the founder of Southern Heritage 411, an organization that promotes the interests of black Southerners. But he said, since his father was a Baptist minister and he's a Christian man, he has problems with people who don't believe in God. Now, you would think that Mr. Edgerton would just, I don't know, snub people like that, or you know, if you do what Jesus said, you would go over and give the atheist a hug, kiss him on the cheek, invite him over to dinner. But not Mr. Edgerton. No. So, the point I'm trying to make here, let's be real. It's just not Caucasians who are dumbasses. You know, black folk can be dumbasses too, right? Does everybody agree with that? Is that okay to say? Especially here in the South, especially when you have Caucasians and black people who try to keep an awful lot of distance between each other because this is the South. But one of the rallying points is what? They got an atheist on the Asheville City Council? Hell, let's go. Come on. Everybody hide your KKK hoods and let's join up with the Negroes and go remove this boy. Let's get rid of this boy, this atheist, son of a bitch. I mean, that's what it's like down here. That's why I like living down here. It's insane. See, it's just totally insane. And it doesn't make any difference to these people that the U.S. Constitution prohibits a religious test for any public office. It doesn't make any difference that this is in total violation of what amendment? I don't know, 14th, 17th, 24th, 59th. It doesn't matter. The dumbassery down here sometimes is exceeded only by the beauty of this part of the country. And, you know, to answer, a lot of people say, well, why do you stay down there? That's because I like it here. Where do you get this kind of comedy? You know? Son of a bitch. Oh, well. Let me see what else we got here. When I saw that today, I just, I thought, oh, please. And Bothwell, you know, Bothwell, the guy that got elected, the guy who is an atheist or whatever, he goes to attends the Unitarian Universalist Congregation, which is what I said this week that Kathy and I were considering. Do you join that? Do you sign up for it? I don't even know. We'll have to go find out. Do you take an oath? Do you have to be baptized in the blood of a caterpillar or something? I have no idea what the UUs do, but we're going to check it out so that Molly gets a second opinion on all this God stuff. And but he's this guy Bothwell is a member of the UU Church, one of the I guess you don't call it a church, a UU congregation in Asheville. And he says, look, you know, what do you mean atheist? You know, what do you mean? He said, the point is irrelevant. You know, God, no God. You know, forget it. We got work to do. And, you know, you got to tend to applaud somebody like that, right? Hey. All right. We have late this afternoon, Ezra Klein, writing at the Washington Post on one of the blog sites, reported on something that's inside the Senate health insurance reform bill. You know, the one that Harry Reid said, we're going to run it by the Congressional Budget Office, and then we'll talk about what's in it. And the members of the Democratic caucus in the Senate said they have no idea what's in this bill. The bill that they, I guess, voted on or whatever they did. And then after they voted on it, rather than discuss everything that's in it, Harry Reid decided to send it to Congressional Budget Office, see how much it's going to cost. Well, there's always, somebody who's willing on the coldest night of the year to fart under the blankets, right? And, well, we've got it for you. It's coming up in just a minute. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
he's just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Podcast trivia coming up after the next break. So we will be opening up the lines during the bottom of the hour break and would really like to give away a free subscription to you. By the way, if you are looking for a stocking stuffer or something, go to our website. If you actually buy a subscription to Commercial Free Malloy podcast downloads, $59.40 a year, you get a second year to send to a friend absolutely free. So that means you wind up spending half of $59.40 on yourself and the other half on a friend or an enemy. Do consider it. All right. Ezra Klein, late this afternoon, discovered something in the Senate bill that allows insurers, the insurance company, to establish annual limits. Huh? Now, allegedly in the insurance bill, there is no lifetime limit on, they can't cap the insurance, the insurers. They can't put a cap on how much they have to pay out over the years. So, I mean, over the lifetime of the policy. They have, just reams of evil little people with sharp teeth who look through your entire history, if you have a big claim, to see where you lied about a mole on your face or a pimple on your ass. And that's in the fine print, you know. If you lie about a pimple on your ass, but they didn't ask me about a pimple on my ass. Yes, they did. If you look at the teeny tiny, teeny, teeny, teeny print, you'll find it. Then they can cancel your policy. You see, but this enters into a whole new realm. The Associated Press says a loophole in the Senate health care bill would let insurers place annual dollar limits on medical care for people struggling with costly illnesses such as, pick one, cancer. The Senate Finance Committee had barred these caps altogether. But somehow it snuck in. Oh, my. The merged Senate bill only erases unreasonable annual caps. Here's a question for you, truth seeker. What is unreasonable? Huh? What's unreasonable? If you are treating your child, if your child is in treatment for neuroblastoma or one of the childhood cancers, what is a reasonable or an unreasonable cap for a year? Huh? If you're the parent, there is no such thing. The life of your child is at stake. If you're the insurance company, listen, we're very sorry, but, you know, we can't go over $750,000. Sorry. No more chemo for you. Sources on Capitol Hill explained that this was inserted, this bit about annual dollar limits on medical care. Was inserted because the Congressional Budget Office said premiums would, quote, go through the roof, end quote, if insurers couldn't cap the benefits. The official quote from Jim Manley, who is Harry Reid's spokesperson, says much the same thing. This is a quote, quote, "We are concerned that banning all annual limits, regardless of whether services are voluntary, could lead to higher premiums. We continue to work with experts on how best to accomplish our goals of preventing insurance companies from imposing arbitrary coverage limits while providing the premium relief American families need and deserve," end quote. Garbage, hog snot, and I wish I could say what I really think of that sentence, but I can't. Of course, the sentence obscures the choice that's being made. The trade-off here, as Ezra Klein points out, is slightly higher premiums for everyone versus total financial ruin for people who absolutely need help the most. Now, politically, choosing everyone, you know, everyone pays a slightly higher premium rather than people with cancer makes sense because the first group has more votes than the second. You see? Of course. But on a policy level, it's nuts. Healthcare insurance literally exists to protect us from the worst case scenarios. So this provision says that the Senate bill will protect everyone but the truly worst case scenarios. If you assume that people support the basic concept of healthcare insurance, then they shouldn't support this. Right? But the American people are much more likely to hear that premiums are going to go up than they are to get a detailed explanation of what they're getting in return for higher premiums, which would be no annual caps. So that if you're struggling with a spouse, a child, a parent, whose treatment, I'm not talking about end-of-life treatment, I'm not talking about keeping grandpa on machines, I'm talking about people who have vibrant lives except for the fact they're dealing with leukemia or some other form of cancer or emphysema or Lou Gehrig's disease or something. And now this provision says that the insurance companies, while they can't put an overall cap on how much they pay out, that's why they hire the people to dump you, they can place a yearly cap. So when your money runs out, what do? Do you go into your nine-year-old and say, Billy, Daddy, sorry, but it looks like it's time for you to die. Trivia here on the Malloy program, where if you get the right answer, you win a one-year subscription, gift subscription, a subscription, whatever the hell you want to call it, to Malloy, to what? To Malloy Podcasts, that's what. All right, Kathy, now if I could just find the podcast trivia questions. Ah, here they are, right where you put them. And who's the first one into the barrel? It's Ted in Worcester, Ohio. Hey, Ted, it's freezing like crazy up in Worcester, Ohio, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
How much snow you got on the ground?
We got no snow, but it's real cold.
Yeah? No snow?
No snow.
Oh, my. All right. You ready to play?
I hope so.
Okay, well, I hope you are, too. All right, here we go. Can we start the music, madam? Here we go. What did Condoleezza Rice briefly have named in her honor? Was it A, an antique baby grand piano, B, a Chevron oil tanker, C, a pair of gold-covered monoblonic shoes, or D, a ceremonial chair at Stanford University?
I'm going to go with D.
D, a ceremonial chair at Stanford University?
Yes.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Oh, well. Actually, what it was, Ted, was a Chevron oil tanker.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that nice? All right, man. Try again next time. We would love to have you try again. All right. What happened to the other people that were on hold? Did we have a bad connect with the phone? All right. I'll tell you what. Quickly. Oh, my God. Calls are dropping. 877-996-2556. You can still take a shot to win this hour's Malloy. What is it we're giving away? That's right, Malloy Podcast. Your subscription, commercial-free download. We will continue until... I hope there's nothing wrong with the phone system. 877-996-2556 if you'd like to play podcast trivia. Let's see what else we got here. The Senate bill that allows insurers to establish annual limits, that to me was a real ball breaker, so to speak. I also have here a note written by Ralph Nader, a few weeks back. And he's responding to what he thought was a letter from Barack Obama, until he realized it was a form letter from Obama via the auspices of the Democratic National Committee, the DNC. And the way he answered it is kind of cool and kind of important. So I'm going to share that with you a little bit tonight. Also, we have Prairie 2. Hey, the lines are working. All right, great. Greg is in Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Mike, timing is everything. I just got my car and turned it on, and I thought, I'll never get a chance to play podcast trivia.
Ba-da-da-da-da-da, here you are.
All right. Your phones went out, so I got a break. How are you?
Yeah, they're all back in now. I'm doing fine. Do you hear us loud and clear on KPHX?
I do. I'm a big KPH fan. I met you at the one of the parties a couple years ago, and I'm a frequent listener, a rare caller, but... it's always good to listen, and I'm going to give it a shot.
All right.
But I might get lucky.
All right, here we go. What did Sarah Palin first obtain in 2007, 2 years ago? Was it A, a college degree, B, a passport, C, an Emmy for 30 Rock, or D, high-powered binoculars for watching Russia?
process of elimination. Let's kill the last two. I'm going to say it's a passport.
A passport. That's it! All right, way to go, Greg.
Awesome.
She never had one.
Yeah, I remember hearing a story about that. She had to go somewhere for a meeting, and so she finally got one.
She did indeed. All right, way to go. All right, Greg, let me put you on hold. Kathy would get the pertinent information. Congratulations, okay?
All right, happy holidays, Mike.
Same to you. Thank you. All right, to the other folks who are holding on, that's it for this hour. Try back next hour, the bottom of the hour, and take another shot at it. Okay? Okay. Now, this thing from Ralph Nader. I guess he had this on his website. He's talking about a form letter he got from Obama. He says, I started reading the two-page single-space missive, and Obama's words prompt some responses. Nader talks about how the letter opens with these undeniable declarations. Now, here's one of them. Quote, there are times in the life of our nation when America's course can only be set by the concerted effort of citizens determined to pull our country through. This is one of those times. And your personal involvement in moving America forward is absolutely essential. End quote. As Nader says, what the personal involvement is all about is rather unclear here, other than to make, you know, a contribution. But anyway, the contribution to the Democratic National Committee is somehow supposed to make sure that, quote, America's families are actively engaged in the critical decisions that lie ahead, end quote. Really? Okay. According to Nader, the money will fund something called Organizing for America, under the Democratic National Committee, which will unleash volunteers and activists to carry our message all across this great country of ours, end quote. Now, the message, of course, includes reforms that will bring down the cost of health insurance for families. But as Nader points out, Obama has taken the one reform, single payer,
it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. Now, if you want some information on the Democratic Socialists of America, they have a website. It's Democratic Socialists of America. It's DSAUSA.org. DSA, Democratic Socialists of America. USA.org. Or you can go to Bernie Sanders, Congressman Bernie Sanders' website, and get all the information you want on democratic socialism. I've made my commitment to it, and in my head, you know, I haven't contributed money to the Democratic Socialist Party yet. But I probably will, you know, $25 here, $15 there. That's about the most that people like us can do. But we'll do it. So you can check out the website if you want to, dsausa.org, or see what Bernie Sanders has to say. And, of course, you can hear Bernie Sanders, I think, every Friday on Tom Hartman's program, right? Doesn't he? Does he still do that? So for those people who have been sending me emails, say, well, you talk about it a lot, but you still say you're a Democrat. I'm a Democrat. Yeah, of course I am. I'll always be a Democrat in my heart. Democratic socialism, though, is not mutually exclusive with the ideals of the Democratic Party. To the contrary, if you go to their website, you'll see that a lot of people who work for Democratic candidates. Like, I would have no problem working to get Dennis Kucinich reelected or elected to a higher office. None whatsoever. And he's not a Democratic socialist. You get the point. So check it out. Go to DSAUSA.org if you want to. Now, I got this from Ex Machina. Du Ex Machina, just Ex Machina in New York City, writes Mike. Those among the disappointed Obama supporters who now perceive his corporatist imperialist policy decisions as the product of cowardice, be it political cowardice or the literal fear for his life, have made only a slight adjustment in the thinking that led to their erroneous assessment of the man for whom they voted. Choosing to believe, in the face of ever-mounting evidence to the contrary, that Obama is a liberal who merely lacks the backbone to pursue a liberal agenda, is to ignore his statements about his own political leanings. Obama, while still a state senator, admonished critics who would make the mistake of pegging him as being from the left. And that, as you know, is just one point in a constellation of facts available to people who wanted to make an informed assessment of the man and to make a reasonable projection about what sort of political decisions he would make if elected. The emerging narrative about Obama that he is a cowardly liberal is just a way for Obama supporters to protect themselves from the truth of their blindness to Obama's actual political character. Like another of your correspondents, I too wondered during the closing months of the 2008 election cycle how so many of your callers were going to get access to Obama's feet so that they could hold them to a fire. Once they elected Obama and he failed to be anything other than a champion for corporations, what power did they believe they would be able to exercise over him? And if they did possess any such power, why had they failed to use it against Obama's predecessor for all of that man's lawlessness? As one who always first embraces the simplest of available explanations, why should I believe that President Obama is doing anything other than what he intended to do all along, especially given that he has done exactly what he said he would? Why should I be surprised by one political decision after another from him, which is not consistent with liberal or progressive ideology, when Obama never claimed to be a liberal or a progressive and has, in fact, cautioned against labeling him as such? Ex Machina, New York City. Well, that's a good point, you know, and I guess I am one of those reluctant Obama supporters trying to protect myself from the truth of my blindness during the closing days of the campaign. And the only defense I have is that, well, he was my second choice. But I guess that's not really a defense, is it? So, Ex Machina, thanks for the email. And that's very interesting, and it's very spot on, as they say, right? Liberal or progressives trying to protect ourselves from the truth of what an Obama presidency really is, as it's developed over the past 10, 11 months. The evidence is there. There's no reason to pretend any longer, is there? I have a very strong feeling, and I don't feel good about this because I think I know what sort of political machine is going to succeed him, but I have a feeling that Obama is going to be a one-term president. And that the person who will be elected next will be one that has not the least interest in the issues that we all assumed Obama was interested in. And that it will probably be kind of rugged. Now, that's all predicated on most Americans, the vast, vast majority of Americans, not wanting to say, I've had enough. I'm no longer going to vote Democratic. Because I have been kicked in the teeth over and over and over and over again. Therefore, I'm going to find a new party. Now, you can go green, you can go independent, or you can go Democratic Socialist. Maybe this time, and I say this for me first, maybe this time we will check out, really check out the record of the people who want to become president of the United States. Again, in self-defense, I think that I did that prior to the election. I talked an awful lot about Obama's rhetoric and his voting record. The evidence was all there, as was Hillary Clinton's. And I said, once the decision is made as to who the candidate is going to be, I would suggest that we vote for the Democrat. I won't be saying that again, ever. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Seven past the hour. This is the Malloy program. I'm not going to make a big deal about this, but I just want to add to what I said during the last segment. I'm not a big joiner. I don't belong to any organizations at all except my union, the AFTER union. And the YMCA. Is that about it? Is that it, Kathy? YMCA and my union. Yeah. I used to be a Boy Scout. That's it. I'm not a big joiner. I'm just not. I believe the nice, loose affiliations, you know, you can move from group to group and learn and in some instances teach and just keep moving, you know, be a moving target. And what that has done for me over the course of my life, it stopped the calcification that can occur, right? You know, you get into an organization, a good organization, eventually become calcified. You become focused on the organization and not on the work it does, yada, 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 yada. So I'm not a big joiner, and I'm not going to make a very great big deal about this conversion from the Democratic Party to Democratic Socialism. The break for me is complete now. Absolutely, totally complete. As Molly says, pinky promise? Yes, pinky promise that this is it for me. I've done what I think is, adequate work in trying to be a good Democrat in within the parameters of the Democratic Party. I've, you know, as I understood it. I was brought up that way. I was brought up in a strictly union background and civil rights and equal rights and yada, yada, yada. As Dylan said, you don't need to be a weatherman to know which way the wind is blowing. You also don't need to be a political scientist to understand that both parties now are completely, totally corrupt insofar as working for the American, the average American person. We know that. You know, everything started to crumble for me. I mean, really crumble during the Clinton years. With the destruction of Glass-Steagall, with the institution of NAFTA, the World Trade Organization watching what they do, the World Bank. Not to say that these organizations haven't done a few good things, but usually it's with the goal of enhancing corporate power, not people power, to borrow a phrase from the Philippines. So I've had it. And I mean it. There's no going back for me. And again, I'm not going to mention this a whole lot. Check out what Bernie Sanders does. Check out the website for the Democratic Socialists of America, DSAUSA.org, and make your own decision. You know, it's entirely up to you. I'm not a big proselytizer either. But I just wanted to get that said so that if you are a regular listener to this program and you start to hear a lack of rhetoric for supporting the Democratic Party, or you start to hear even more criticism of what the Democratic Party has done and is doing, you'll understand where it's coming from. This is not gratuitous criticism. I don't play games on this program. I really don't, unless they're clearly identified as games. Sure. But where it concerns points of view or the subjects we cover, no, it's not a game. It's for real. I don't do anything to make people go, oh, my gosh, we better listen to him tomorrow. What's that about? No. That's not good stuff. That's BS. So anyway, that's all I wanted to say about that. Okay. Prairie 2 sent this in. We'll get to your phone calls here in a minute. I realize folks are holding on. I will get there. Prairie 2 writes, three more bank chains were seized today, bringing the total to 133 for the year. The head of the FDIC says the peak for bank failures will come next year. Indeed, the commercial loans made 5 years ago will be coming due. Those loans will be too many of the more overextended developments built at the peak of the bubble years. The Treasury Department has instituted a program to bail out as many of the small banks as it can to keep the failure numbers from getting too big right before the 2010 elections. The headline today was that retail sales for November were up more than 1%. But contrast this with state sales tax receipts that are down 10 to 20% depending on how deep your state is into the depression. States are gearing up to slash next year's budgets, and this will not be good for the economy. The House has passed a bill regulating the financial services industry. Woohoo! It's not nearly enough, but Republicans are screaming that it's the end of freedom for Americans. So there must be a couple of good things in it. Funny how they don't care about any of the freedoms we've lost so far, but regulate parasitic bankers? And it's the end of the world! The rest of the world is paying close attention to whether or not the U.S. is serious about reining in these overgrown corporations that threaten the world economy. This is a no-brainer for the rest of the world after last year's banking collapse. The runaway food commodity markets, fueled by speculators and the specter of famine, was a wake-up call for most. There is some hint that this could be starting up again, as the rice market is heating up. It's possible to store grain for a number of years if you go about it right, or you can just go with canned goods in the Christmas stocking this year. Prairie 2. You can check out his website, prairie2.com. Some phone calls would be appropriate. Blaine is in Overland Park, Missouri, right?
Kansas.
I'm sorry. Well, I was close.
Yeah, it was. Hey, nice to talk to you, Mike. I normally don't listen to your program, but I was on errands tonight, and I was flipping around, and I heard you reading about Nader's opinions of Obama's play, and it strikes a chord with me. I'm a conservative, and I think a lot of the people that probably voted for Obama are probably feeling the same buyer's remorse that I felt for good old W back in 2001, especially after the Patriot Act was passed. Mm-hmm. And I feel like both parties are corrupt. Both are controlled by the bankers. They do not have the people's best interest at heart, and they do not really care what their constituents feel. I think people need to start acting at the local level, be they conservative, socialist, Democrat, whatever, and start taking back our country at the grassroots level. And don't pay attention to what the national parties say, because both parties are bought and paid for by the Goldman Sachs's, the oil companies. It's very frustrating. And
what is your view as to how Without getting too deep here, because, you know, this is a radio program, but what's your view as how to restructure? You know, I'm in agreement with what you said up to this point, but since you identify yourself as a conservative, and I certainly identify myself as a Democrat, or am now a Democratic Socialist, you and I at some point would diverge, and if we hold to history of these two parties, we would diverge dramatically. So what do you see as how you want to see the country go?
Well, I think you would probably agree with me. If we went back to our constitutional roots and just kept it at what I find brilliant about what the founders enacted in this country was the person has the power and the government should not be, we're almost serfs now, but make it more of a local activist level. If you and I were at competing for the same position, or we were as candidates as maybe the county level or whatnot, let our debate be the factor. Let us be the ones that determine where the direction of our local community goes.
Well,
but both of us would wear our hearts on our sleeves, basically. We're not going to hide behind lies. We're going to say, you know, I believe in personal liberty, the free market. You may have different opinions, but, you know, let it come out. I'm not going to.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's fair enough, Blaine. And I hope you continue to listen. I'm glad you found the program. I've got a break here. Make way for commercials. But thanks for calling, and I hope you'll continue to tune in. We'll be right back, Truth Seekers. Stay with us.
Tonight, how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malone.
Past the hour. Coming up after the next break, our second attempt. Last one was successful to give away 1 year subscription to Malloy podcast downloads, commercial free. Reproductions of the program. You get a whole year's supply if you are to buy them for $59.60 a year. And if you buy one now, you also get one an entire year free, so that you can give as a gift subscription. So if you're inclined to do that, go to my website, MikeMalloy.com. The information is there. But podcast trivia means you get one free if you get the right answer. Okay? Okay. John's in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Hey, John.
Hello. Good night. Good evening.
Hi.
Yeah, I am the fellow that sent you a letter about I'm running against Blanche Lincoln.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you also sent me the video, which I've not looked at yet. What else did you send me? You sent me something else, too.
A check.
Oh, that's right. A 1 year subscription, which we sent into our business office up in Connecticut. Thank you very much, John. I would like to at some point get you on the program and talk about your platform and so on and so forth.
Excellent. No, your subject tonight really caught my attention, and one of the things I've been saying to people that I meet, I've been meeting a lot of people, and a lot of them from out of state, saying, I wish we lived here in Arkansas so we could vote for you. And I simply tell them, you can vote for me simply by, if you have a free trader in whatever category he is in, whether he's a Democrat or Republican or whatever, vote him out of office. It doesn't matter who you get in his place. Anybody that has enough sense not to be a free trader probably has enough sense to do some other things correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so-called free trade is has there been a worse joke perpetrated on the American public than this NAFTA and GATT, the General Agreement on Trade and Tariff, all this stuff that has left us where we are in this country. I understand that we are entering into a different era, that hardcore big industrial manufacturing may be, a dinosaur industry. We should be moving on. But what a better way. I'm sure there are better ways to make the transition than just shutting everything down and making people go unemployed and saying, well, you got to retrain.
Well, retrain for what?
Not everybody
either wants to be a computer engineer or a computer programmer or whatever.
Right.
And not everybody is capable of it.
That's true.
You're writing off probably 8/10 of the American public who is quite content to work at a factory job, a manufacturing job, and things do have to be manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to just give that up and say there are higher level jobs out there when there aren't, in reality, is rather foolish, I think. And, the way I look at the thing is, I was involved in moving jobs out of the United States to Mexico for many years. I never met a worker on either side of the border who was helped by this, because we pay, subsistence level wages in Mexico, and we lay people off to an uncertain future here.
Mm-hmm.
So I tend to say that, and everything I've read and studied has shown that the whole free trade mantra has really increased poverty and hunger throughout the world. There's an excellent new book by John Jeter called Flat Broke in a Free Market that really describes the devastation being meted out to the poor people across the world as we transfer wealth from the poor to the rich.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying that probably more important than anything else is just clean house with the people who are infected with this free trade virus or whatever it is, and get some people in there who have a little more common sense and who have the interest of the working man at heart. And I don't see how we can be a help to anybody by going out of business and becoming weak, becoming the world's largest, most in-debt third world nation. We need to be strong.
Yeah, we do. We need to be strong economically. I'll tell you what I'd like you to do, John. We would love to have you on the program. Send an email to Kathy, my producer. It's just MalloyProducer@AOL.com. MalloyProducer@AOL.com. Send her a little info, and we'll book you in, okay?
Very good.
All right, John, thank you. And thanks for the renewal on your podcast subscription. I appreciate that, man.
Thank you for the program.
All right. Take care, John.
Okay, good night.
All right, bye-bye. Yeah, I hope he does that. I want to get this guy on, Kathy. And anybody who is not running as a Democrat or a Republican, I don't mean if you're running as a Nazi, but if you are a real progressive, we like to give you some airtime. You know what I'm saying? Podcast trivia when we come back. The number here is 877-996-2556. If you're on hold, Kathy's going to check with you and see if you want to do the podcast trivia route. Okay? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
You got that mystery. Lord, I need a plan. All I got is this compromise and a bag full of alibis. Lord, as empty as a bottle of whiskey in my shaking hand. It's gonna be easy in the valley tomorrow. 'Cause tonight we're gonna blow it all away. Lord, we feel so twisted.
It's time once again for podcast trivia on the Mike Malloy Radio Show, where you can win a one-year subscription to commercial-free podcast downloads. All you have to do is come up with the right answer to our trivia question. All right, cut the music. God, I hate that music. All right, let's go with Carol Lee, who is in San Francisco, listening on Green 960. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Mike.
All right, you ready to give this a shot?
I'm ready.
Okay, let me see here. I am Hugh. Okay, here's your question. Who was Jack Abramoff? Was he A, one of the Supreme Court nominees rejected by the Senate? B, former Bush White House press secretary? C, Dick Cheney's assistant who took the fall for the Valerie Plame outing? Or D, lobbyist and currently incarcerated con man with ties to many powerful Republican members of Congress?
D!
Yes. D!
So this, but it's running out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, man, this is called, it's called Kismet. No, it's serendipity. No, you got the right answer. Way to go. All right, yeah. Carol Lee, before I hang up, let's talk about what you want to talk about, reforming the Democratic Party. But I'm going to put you on hold so that you can give Kathy whatever information she needs, right?
Okay.
All right, now, what you really called about is...
That was a little dismal. I mean, I certainly understand why you want to disavow the Democratic Party now, but I think the two-party system is really entrenched, and now may be a good time to put energy towards taking over the Democratic Party.
Wait, Carol. Carol, I've been trying this for over a decade. No, I've finally reached that point. I've said many times on this program, I'm a Democrat, big D, at heart, always have been. But you know what? I'm beginning to believe in economic democracy, and we're not getting it from the Democratic Party. We are getting from the Democratic Party, going back to Slick Willie, and I admit he's a talker. Oh, Slick Willie can really talk. He can just about convince you anything. And you know, I voted for him twice, but I've had enough. The Democratic Party cannot be reformed. And I think what really tore it for me was when the Democrats finally got control of the House, when was it, a year and a half ago, and Nancy Pelosi sat there and said, no, impeachment's off the table. We had a criminal administration in charge of this country for two terms, and in both instances they stole the election. And the top Democrat in the People's House said, no, it's off the table. And now we have a Democrat in the White House who is saying... in a friend of the court brief, in a case in California, no, we don't want you to go after John Yoo in a civil case, actually on any case, because they have thwarted every single possible move by anybody to try to bring these people to justice. That's a long way of saying, Carol, really, truly, irrevocably, I am not going back. I've had it with the Democratic Party. It cannot be reformed. It cannot be.
You 1,000% about the party, but if you look at all the avenues for change, they're all bad. I mean, a third party is just going to mean the Republicans will get in. I mean, there is no solution.
Well, I don't believe in no solutions. I really don't. If the next couple of three elections mean. Or if the next election means that because enough people vote Democratic Socialist, a Republican gets in, well, that's the way it goes. I mean, I can't, nor can you, be responsible for the collective ignorance and blindness of the American people. And I am not going to buy into it any further. I cannot. It's a matter of being able to go to sleep at night. It's a matter of being able to look myself in the mirror. I can't talk about this hypocrisy any longer. I can't come on this program, Carol Lee, and talk to people about voting for the Democratic Party. I can't do it. Because in doing that, what I'm doing in my little 38 listener radio program, I'm saying one thing and thinking something else, and I can't do it. Now, I'm not a proselytizer. I'm not after people, converts. Everybody walks their own path. I firmly believe that. But I, Mike Malloy, and I also said that I will put Democratic candidates on this program who have an agenda that closely parallels or is the same as economic democracy or social democy, however you want to say it. But I'm finished with the Democratic Party. I'm finished with it here in Georgia. I'm finished with it nationally. It's over.
Well, what about groups like MoveOn.org or groups that kind of are part of the Democratic Party but work on the outside? I mean, what about
I'll continue to support Move On. And again, I will continue to support certain Democratic candidates the best I can. But their agenda has to be one that is almost a complete break from what the Democratic Party is doing. Otherwise, you know, let me ask you, why keep voting for the same thing? It's Carol, it's not going to change. You and I.
Well, I really feel like, you know, we don't have that much of a choice. It's a two-party system. And actually, I was more progressive and started out not voting hardly at all and just disavowing politics. And it's more later in life that I became, that I started really voting and being involved. And so I'm thinking more of just critiquing the Democratic Party and trying to work to change it.
Well, I respect that. I respect you for making that choice. That's just not the choice that that I can make. All right?
Okay.
All right, Carol, now hold on. Let me put you on hold,
yeah.
and I'll get Kathy to tell you how to do this. All right? I think it's time for, do we have music for Relief of the Week? I don't think we do. All right, this is something Rolaids is one of our sponsors. And this little feature is called the Relief of the Week. And it's sponsored by Rolaids. And what I do is each week on Friday, I pick some story that gave me some relief. And here's my Relief of the Week for this week. Congressman Dennis Kucinich is circulating two what are called privileged resolutions in an attempt to trigger votes to end the wars in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Yeah, Afghanistan and Pakistan. Kucinich, in a written release a couple of days ago, said, I will begin circulating two privileged resolutions which will trigger debate and votes on a timely withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan and Pakistan. He said the other day the U.S. Secretary of Defense at his side, the president of Afghanistan, when Gates was in that country, declared that his country's security forces will need financial and training assistance from the United States for the next 15 to 20 years. We cannot afford this. We cannot afford the loss of lives. We cannot afford the cost to taxpayers. We cannot afford to fail to exercise our constitutional right to end these wars. And then Kucinich quotes Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, United States, makes it Congress's responsibility to determine whether or not we go to war or stay at war. Consistent with Article 1, Section 8, the privileged resolutions that he's going to introduce will invoke the War Powers Resolution of 1973. I ask for your support of these resolutions, Kucinich writes, which will be introduced in the House in January. So, Kucinich is going to make an effort. I know. Go to his website, kucinich.us, and see what you can do to help. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is my Relief of the Week. Rolaids. How do you spell relief? R-O-L-A-I-D-S. How do I spell relief? K-U-C-I-N-I-C-H. Well, not really. You know, Kucinich is somebody who has, who certainly has not given up, but I would not call Kucinich, a Democrat, a big D Democrat in the sense that his, party colleagues are in the House. Look how disrespected he is most of the time. Is Kucinich, as long as he's been in the U.S. House, is he the chairman of any powerful committee or powerful subcommittee? Is he ever included in these discussions when the big dogs in the Democratic Party and the U.S. House get together and decide which corporation's ass they're going to kiss next? Huh? No. I think Kucinich is one of those who retains his Democratic Party affiliation because, Cleveland is not yet on completely underwater. And if he identified himself as Bernie Sanders, even Bernie Sanders, didn't he? I guess he's independent, but the people who voted for him knew he was voting for they were voting for a socialist. I think, you know, that's Vermont, right? Ohio is a little bit different. And Kucinich has to play the game. But Kucinich, by any definition I've seen, I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's stuff out there I haven't seen. But by any working definition of a democratic socialist or a social democrat, if the term democratic socialist is scary, Kucinich qualifies in what he advocates. So that's my relief of the week. Sponsored by Rolaids, and we thank them for sponsoring it. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
This hole in the wall. I call a holster that is empty, just a gun to the head. I am a holy roller. I'm playing Russian roulette. I've been told gambling's a sin. I'm gonna place my bets. I'm gonna play to win.
Uh-oh, he just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. Joe in Vista, California writes, regarding the caller that said not everyone can be a programmer, you know, when you're, when your job disappears. I think that was Steve, wasn't it? Regarding that, Joe writes, Mike, I was a programmer for about 25 years. Companies don't want to even see a resume with that kind of experience. They consider us to be too expensive. If a person actually has a degree in engineering, as I do, they are lucky if they are working in that field after reaching 50. Their best bet is to plan for this and have a backup profession completely thought out as a backup. Fortunately for me, I had a backup profession as a cabinet furniture maker. Take care and have a great holiday season. You too, Joe. Go to his website, woodistry.com. Wood, I-S-T-R-Y, woodistry. I like that, like artistry. Woodistry, W-O-O-D-I-S-T-R-Y.com. Custom furniture and cabinetry, especially if you live on the West Coast. Woodistry.com. Well, you try saying it. Woodistry. W-O-O-D-I-S-T-R-Y. Thanks, Joe. And this is the headline, the subject, Adios Democrats. This is from Jeff in Washington State, writes, Mike, the DNC can kiss my Dick Cheney. One brief example of my frustrations comes because of actions by the Grant County, Washington Democrats. We always hear that all politics start at the local level, right? The GCD, the Grant County Democrats, passed a resolution during the last state election to support one of the two Republican candidates for county prosecutor. There was no other party candidate. It's extremely red around here, but I remain for some of the same reasons you speak of about where you're at, and I like to piss them off every chance there is. So I called the GCD to complain and to ask why in the hell do such a thing. A return call? Never received. I emailed one of the officers of the county Democrats and finally got a snide reply stating that, yes, that's what they did. So what? So I called the National Democratic National Committee and was basically answered with, so what? And that they wouldn't intervene into local organizations' matters. So I called the Washington State Democratic Committee, was brushed off with the same type of crap. It wasn't until I finally threw a fit over the phone that the chairman took the call and attempted to chastise me while stating that my concern, quote, wasn't important and there's a health care bill to get passed, end quote. Well, thanks but no thanks. They can all synchronize their watches and join the Wicked Witch of the North as far as I'm concerned. By the way, that succubus was in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho this week signing her book-covered scribbling, and one of the women that the local news station showed up on television was shaking and crying. She was so overcome. Creature peoples were lining up the night before in single-digit weather. The first woman in line was interviewed and said she had to attend because she'd never have another opportunity to experience such an event. I can't take it anymore and can't even buy canned food any longer for fear I'll start lobbing them at the Democrats and the Republican crowds and then have to spend the rest of my life in Gitmo. Jeff in Washington State. Yeah. I got something coming up next hour that you're going to like. It's entitled The Obama Effect. It's very quick. The Demise of the Democratic Party and a Gift to the Country. Where are we? Right here. Dave is in Tarpon Springs, Florida. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Mike. How you doing? Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
I am also a frustrated Democrat. I'm not quite ready to bail out of the party yet. In part because we are a two-party country. I don't know what realistic option we have, but, I mean, I think it's fixable. We just need – I love those FDR clips that you'll play from time to time. We need somebody pugnacious. We need somebody at a higher level, hopefully Obama himself, to start fighting and calling out these Republicans for what they are. They are no longer a legitimate political party. They no longer operate – in good faith.
Well, that's true. They don't operate in good faith within the parameters of the two-party system as they should be right now. They should be the loyal opposition to a party that is working to advance the interests of the American average American person. But the Democratic Party has delegitimized itself also because of what they're doing. And I just can't, you know, I simply can't do it anymore. I understand your reluctance to give up on the Democratic Party. Been there, done that, got the T-shirt. It's a very difficult decision to make if you have been a Democrat most of your or all of your adult life. It is a difficult decision, but I just simply have had enough. I've busted my ass since 1963, and I've had enough.
I hear you. I understand. You know what I equate it to, Mike? Are you still there?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I equate the current climate, you know, in the country to a boxer, you know, fighting with rules, fighting against an ultimate fighter in a cage match, you know, kicking, scratching, clawing, eye gouging. You know, and I think the Democrats are trying to reach common ground, and they wind up appeasing and appeasing and appeasing. And this goes back to Clinton as well. I know you're mad, as we all are, about Clinton, too. And they're trying to appease, again, a party not interested in solving our problems at all. Somebody needs to step up and call them out. I hear a few of the guests, you know, congresspeople on some of the other shows on Sirius XM and stuff.
Right,
finally...
Right.
You know, admitting that and saying it publicly, it just needs to be louder and stronger. And let's shame these people. Obama could do it so elegantly. And
well, Dave, I hear you, man, loud and clear, but they can't be shamed. I mean, if we had 8 years of a administration that broke every single law and rule from Nuremberg conclusions after World War II to the U.S. Constitution, to Geneva Conventions on behavior during times of warfare, and then we had a Democrat leader, a Democratic leader, Nancy Pelosi, and her counterpart in the Senate saying, "Get over it. We're not going to do anything to punish these criminals who took over the country." That's where that's when it tore for me. Hey, Dave, I got to leave it there, pal. Thank you. I'm glad you called in. I hope you check in with us again. Take care. All right. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program on Friday evening. We have one more round of podcast trivia coming up at the bottom of this hour. So so far tonight, gave away 2 subscriptions. Want to give away a third one? Stick around. If you get the right answer, you win a free 1-year subscription to Molloy Show podcast downloads. And, you know, you don't need an iPod. I know a lot of people say, well, I don't have an iPod. No, 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 no. It just comes to you in an MP3 format, and you can listen on your computer. All right? All right. Douglas is in Sacramento. Hey, Douglas.
Hey, Michael. Well, good to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
Are you? I'm hearing an echo. My voice is echoing.
You must have ghosts in the machine.
Okay.
You're coming through here loud and clear. Everything's cool.
All right, I'll just try to ignore it.
Okay.
Oh, the Bush thing, you know, the Bushneks broke more laws than that. They broke laws dating back to the Magna Carta. Remember? Yep.
Yes, I do.
Mm. Anyway, I told Kathy I had a possible answer to why they despise Clinton so much.
All right.
Why that woman at the cocktail party you told about once? Why she said something about...
Oh, yeah, yeah, Christmas party where she...
He was dishonest or something?
Well, no, she got in my face and she said, I don't like him. I said, why not? And she leaned over in her very expensive dress, her very expensive jewelry, and she said, because he was an effing liar. Only she didn't say effing.
Right. And I thought the balanced budget thing that he put through might have been it.
No, it was... what, you mean the reason the woman said that?
Right.
Oh, it's because she was a psychopathic Republican.
Oh, that too.
Yeah.
But I mean, you see...
She had no reason to say it. She just said it.
Well, they thought he was a corporatist. They thought that he was their guy. They just were giving him grief for the hell of it because he was on the other side of the aisle. And then he went ahead and did a couple of things that really shafted them.
That really shafted...
The corporatists, the balanced budget amendment was one.
Well, I don't think. I would disagree with you on that, Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was anything that Bill Clinton did, anything that was counter to a corporate agenda for this country. Balanced budget effort. I mean, when you say the balanced budget thing, there was no law passed. There was no, I mean, he didn't alter anything. He just,
wasn't there a pay-as-you-go thing that went through under his watch?
A what?
A pay-as-you-go amendment. That's what balanced the budget. Under his watch?
There might have been something entitled pay-as-you-go, but that was the way Clinton destroyed, in his 8 years, as much of the social safety net in this country as he could. Most of it had to do with poor people. His so-called welfare reform efforts were nothing but Republican-dictated agenda items. So I don't know. It might have been called pay-as-you-go, but there was, as far as I know, I mean, I may be wrong, but there was nothing passed that I'm aware of that became the law of the land. If so, was it repealed when Bush came in?
No, there was a sunset clause. It just ended.
It ended? What, it was only good for 2 years? 3 years?
Something, I think.
Well, I don't know. I'm lost on that one, Douglas.
Oh, good, the echo's gone.
Yeah, okay.
Well, by the way, I'm the guy that, I talked to you at Yoshi's, remember?
Probably.
Yeah. And I think I reminded you about the time at the Crest Theater and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
So I'm still out here listening.
Well, good.
I don't find the time to call in as much anymore, but I'm still here.
Well, that's good. All right. Thanks a lot, Douglas. I appreciate what you had to say. Thank you. Let me see if I can. Have we got time? When do we break here? Okay. Let me try to do this. This is from Michael Rechtenwald, PhD, The Obama Effect. The decision to escalate Afghanistan war should put the final nail in the coffin of change and hope that Democrats and others crawled into when they supported Obama. The evidence that Obama is every bit the representative of the corporate oligarchy and no less a corporate show than the rest has been mounting for nearly a year, or well before the election. Only fanatics could have heard Obama's speech in Afghanistan the other night and failed to hear the resonances of Bush. But the writing was on the wall over a year ago when Obama supported the bailouts of the banks and brokerage firms that leveraged their destruction of the economy on the foreclosure of homes. Few could miss the fact that the health care reform bill, should it ever pass, will be another unwarranted and gratuitous bailout, this one of the insurance and pharmaceutical companies. Obama diverted the legitimate anger and energy for real change and scuttled it under the fraudulent tent of the Democratic Party. He led millions to the cliff, and they are now falling off in droves. Those who've not quite gotten to the edge screech and yell, "Wait, give him time!" Those who gave warning from the outset are not busy casting nets. We welcome the demise of the Democratic Party. And that is exactly the Obama effect. Every last tissue of belief in the Democrats should by now be shred and cast aside. The Democrats are no less the corporate bailers and militarists than the Republicans. They hand trillions to the banks and brokerage firms. They dissolve union contracts and send the workers to the dogs. Their unmanned drones bomb Pakistan, killing and maiming innocents and displacing tens of thousands. They sell the same lies about the wars that they have to do with terrorism or democracy rather than oil and other resources as their predecessors did. They fund the very enemy that they claim to fight. They keep up the same contracts with Blackwater and its successors. They vote for the same war funding. They carry out the same secret renditions. They sanction and continue the same spying on U.S. citizens. They exonerate torturers and war criminals from the previous administration. They are war criminals in complicity with other war criminals. For those who hadn't quite gotten the point before, thanks to Obama's euphistic and high-flown rhetoric excesses, no one can now believe that another Democrat, even an apparently more left one, will ever deliver a thing that he or she promises. Obama has filled the Democratic hot air balloon to the limit, and it has burst. It falls like a failing parachute along with those who trusted it. Despite all of this, or rather because of it, Obama has given, albeit unwittingly, a great gift to the majority. He has shown those who still have brainwaves that nevermore should anyone other than a corporate shill believe in a Democrat for any positive change in terms of the vast majority. The one thing that Obama has changed is the credulity accorded Democratic demagoguery. Am I merely opening the door for the Republicans to fill the vast void of credibility left by the Democrats, you ask? To answer requires some clarification. The Democrats are one of two levers by which the ruling oligarchy controls the political processes to their nearly exclusive advantage. This isn't a new development. It has merely become too obvious to ignore. The Democrats have left this void. It's not my doing. I recommend that it be filled by a working class party movement, not a Green Party, not a Libertarian Party, not an Independent Party, but a party that is aligned with the vast majority, a party of the workers, workers of farms, of factories, of schools, of construction sites, of the auto industry, of the retail industry, of the research firms, of the institutions of higher education, of banks, of city and other government offices, of those who make their living not from profit, but from wages. Every other party in every other country has ended up being just another lever of the ruling oligarchy. Only a working class majority can overcome the power elite and end the wars. Only a working class party can change the socio-political and economic conditions. Only a majority party can deliver to itself health care coverage. Only a majority party can save the environment. Only a majority party can order and order can put production on a rational basis for their own benefit and not the benefit of a tiny minority. We owe a great debt of gratitude to Obama. He has finally dashed and destroyed the false hopes in the Democratic Party and the political system as it stands. Obama was the false prophet of change. Now, let the real change begin. Ah, my goodness. Like a cold shower, isn't it? We'll be back after this break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Don't need a weatherman to know it.
truth seekers. Here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. Don't forget, after this break, one more shot at podcast trivia so you can win a 1 year's subscription to Malloy Show downloads, podcast downloads. You know, another thing that is just, I don't know how corporate media can take note of this in such a cavalier way, but they do. And how we, the people who actually work for a living and risk unemployment and have to deal with unemployment, like you may have or are facing it, like Kathy and I did at the beginning of this year. In the midst of all that, the economic destruction that's occurred in this country as a result of 8 years of Republicanism, and before that, 8 years of Clinton. I mean, let's be real. Is that possible anymore? I don't think so. And before that, 4 years of Pappy Bush, and before that, 8 years of Reagan. So you really have to go back to 1980. The seeds may have been planted early. Earlier than 1980, but since 1980, for the past almost 30 years now, the destruction of the working class in this country has been a goal of the right wing. The destruction of the social safety net has been a goal of the right wing. And by the right wing, I don't just mean Republicans. I mean Democrats and Republicans. The people on the political right, like Clinton, like Reagan, like both Bushes, you know, and now like Obama. And it's almost become a reality. We are so close to having everything smashed onto the rocks here. So in the midst of all that, if you follow the news, you have already heard that Goldman Sachs, which apparently is the big monster in this country, or represents the big monsters, or has a lot of the big monsters working there, Goldman Sachs will pay out record bonuses this year. It's 20-something billion bonuses. Bonuses. For doing what? Now, you right-wingers, before you send me an email saying, well, how dare you attack the capitalist system? Those people work for their bonuses. Everybody deserves, you know, A, kiss my ass. But B, when you're composing your half-witted letter, maybe you can tell me exactly what the employees of Goldman Sachs did to get the bonus. On second thought, don't bother. But that's just one example. One example. And then we have an administration in place here who gave the impression, at least to us progressives and liberals and diehard Democrats who, as the one emailer said, crawled inside this box of denial and said, oh, no, I'm not going to listen. Barack Obama's a liberal progressive. Blah, blah, blah. In the midst of all this, the big bonuses, we have a president who deems it okay to go ahead and commit another 30,000 American soldiers to a war that will not, by any definition, be won, even if winning only means building that goddamn pipeline. That's not going to happen either. So, in the midst of all that insanity, all this craziness, all this absolute mucked up situation that we're dealing with, we have to also be aware that the financial services industry, the people who churn the stock market, you know, the stock market is up. It's up. It's higher than it's been for a long time. Who's making money on that? Seriously, who's making money on that? Do you have any idea? Do you have any idea why the numbers are up? People are making money on the commodities market, too. You know what commodities are making money on? Food futures! What does that mean? It means they're buying and selling futures contracts on the basic essentials of life, which means when the dreck hits the fan, rice, wheat, corn, pork bellies, pig eyes, whatever the hell is considered a food anymore, will almost be priced beyond the reach of the average person in this country. I'm sick of it. But I haven't given up hope. I really haven't given up hope. I haven't given up hope, and I'm not ready to pick up a weapon and take to the streets. There has to be a different way, and the different way, of course, is to abandon these two hopelessly owned and operated by corporate America political parties. The system is stacked. The system is stacked to make it almost impossible for a third party to elect anybody, anywhere, anytime, on any level. But it still can be done. The operative word there is almost. So, having said that, and I hate that expression, we're going to take a break. When we come back, you get a chance to win a one-year subscription to Molloy Show podcast downloads. All right? If you're on hold, we're going to ask you the question. Kathy will check with you before we do this. So stick around. I'm Mike Molloy. Hit the towers in the Pentagon, killing those the government wasn't dependent on. It's easy to control the scared, so they keep us in fear. We're their favorite Middle Eastern demon named Bin Laden this year. Butch disguises blood, thus his patriotism, convincing the living to love operations and to get them. But when he realized we don't support their attacks, they needed something to distract. Anthrax, this further demonizes Afghanis, so Americans cheer while we kill their innocent families. And what better place to start a war, to build a pipeline to get the oil that they had wanted before. It's your last shot for tonight to win a free one-year subscription to Molloy Show commercial-free podcast downloads. Okay? If you're ready, I'm ready. Here we go. Chris is in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening on 1350 AM. Hey, Chris.
Hi, Mike. So what's the question?
Okay.
Hopefully it's as easy as the previous one.
But... yeah, well, there's been a couple easy ones, but we saved the hard one for you.
Oh, great.
All right? But you can handle it. All right, here we go. What was unique about Bush's cabinet during the 8 years of illegal occupation, different from all other previous cabinets? All right? Was it A, more multimillionaires than any prior cabinet, the richest cabinet in history? B, the only all-Christian cabinet in history? C, the only cabinet where all members were college graduates? Or D, only cabinet where all had the middle initial B? All right, let me do it again. What was unique about Bush's cabinet that made it different from all other previous presidential cabinets? A, more multimillionaires than any prior cabinet. B, the only all-Christian cabinet. C, the only cabinet where all members were college graduates. Or D, the only cabinet where all had the middle initial B.
Actually, I think it's a tough one. I'm hesitating between A and B. Give me a tip.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Well, I'll have to go with A.
A. You win.
Oh, great.
All right. Way to go. Yeah, it was the richest cabinet in history of this republic, more multimillionaires than any prior cabinet. So, you know, and remember how many of them owned, what, like 10 houses? It was just an obscenity.
Only 10?
Yeah, it was an obscenity, and I can imagine that if we took a look at the personal wealth of members of the Obama cabinet, we wouldn't find a great deal of difference. I don't know, maybe so. All right.
Can I still ask a question?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Now, before we hang up, though, I'll put you on hold, and Kathy will get the information for you. All right?
Great.
Go ahead. The reason you called in.
Yes. Well, you were very happy about the passage of the Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, which is what it's called, apparently. Well, guess what? There was an amendment from Congressman Murphy of New York. Are you aware about this amendment?
No, I'm not.
Well, that amendment was passed, and I wasn't able to find the exact thing on the Thomas.org site. But anyway, this was an AP News that I read last night. Well, the amendment, it has an exemption for entities that trade in derivatives. And guess what the exemption is? It exempts all...
Well, any exemption that sets aside outside the realm of public scrutiny the derivatives market is madness, and means that there's no check and balance at all. Why didn't they just reinstitute the Glass-Steagall Act?
Oh yeah, good question. Anyway, I'm going to quote you.
Go ahead.
Okay. So it exempts entities that trade in derivatives not as financial speculators, but as hedge against market fluctuations, such as currency rates or gasoline prices. Now, this is the text from AP News. Well, we could probably add or housing or food or metals. Now, notice the word hedge.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, they can hedge against market fluctuations such as currency rates or gasoline prices.
Right.
Well, what else is there in derivatives anyway? I don't know. Okay.
There's real estate. There's mortgages.
You can hedge against market fluctuations in mortgages.
Oh, sure.
Can't you? I don't know. Maybe. But anyway, this is a huge gap. Okay, this is a huge exemption, and that amendment was passed.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt or any question, I should say, as to why it was passed, and that is using a very simplistic answer here, it was passed because. The members of Congress, regardless of the party, are in the for the majority, for the most part, they do what the people who put them in office want them to do, and the voters did not put them in office. The voters may have trotted down to the rigged voting machines and pulled a lever or pushed done a keystroke or whatever, but. The only reason the candidates were candidates was because they were able to, either as getting reelected or elected for the first time, was to appeal to the people who provide the money.
Yeah, and this is a young congressman from New York, Congressman Murphy, M-U-R-P-H-Y, like you would have guessed. Definitely probably needs money to be reelected and probably got a lot of money to get elected.
So, I'll bet.
He looks very young. Okay, I'm not going to.
Yeah, well, with an amendment like that, I would imagine he got lots of money. All right, thank you, Chris. I'm going to put you on hold. Kathy will get the information from you. And congratulations on winning the podcast thingy. Steve is in Natick, Massachusetts. Is that right?
Natick, Massachusetts.
Natick. Hey, Steve.
Steve the banker.
Oh, Steve the banker. Okay.
Long time.
Well, you gotta say that. Don't say, when Kathy says, where are you calling from? Just say, nah, I'm Steve the banker.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. All right, how you doing?
I figured you forgot about me.
How are you?
I'm still alive.
Well, good. Yeah, I get an email from you every now and again, so I know you're still alive, but.
Yeah, there's so many things to talk about, but I'm gonna talk about what I told, Kathy. Yeah, and that's the war.
Okay.
Because all issues, all jobs, all health care, all infrastructure of this country is tied to the war. And the reason for that is how much it costs. It has completely robbed our entire generation of our future in this country and our kids' generation. And now with this last speech and policy that is so Vietnam, it completely robs us of just about everything.
Mm-hmm.
There really is no hope of health care. There's no hope of infrastructure and a brand new building down the block, you know, that may house some manufacturing. There's just no hope. Where's the money coming from?
Mm-hmm.
They're about to put in $200 to $300 billion more into the Pentagon. The Pentagon already takes one third of our entire tax levy in this country.
Mm-hmm.
One third.
I thought it was even higher than that.
Well, you know, believe it or not, it's pretty hard even for me to decipher exactly what the numbers are.
Yeah, yeah.
You try figuring it out.
I can't.
Yeah. And I want to do this very quickly. I don't know if you know the book. I'm sure you do. Stanley Karnow, Vietnam, the history, complete history of Vietnam.
No, I don't know it, Steve.
Well, this is actually the best book ever written on the subject.
Okay.
I'm going to quote this. Now that I said the name of it, actually kind of blows away what I was going to do. But this is what the majority leader said back in 1964, and think about today.
Okay.
The Senate Majority Leader clearly saw the danger ahead and its causes. The United States had spent billions in 7 years, yet substantially the same difficulties remain. And if indeed they had not been compounded, the fault lay not only in the Vietnam threat, the Viet Cong threat, but also in the shortcomings of U.S. policy and with the Diem regime, for its failure to share political power.
Mm-hmm.
The senator recommended a careful reassessment of American interests in Southeast Asia to avoid deeper U.S. involvement. Where's the responsibility? It rests with the people of South Vietnam. It is their country, their future. That is what is at stake, not ours. To ignore that reality will not only be immensely costly in terms of American lives and resources, but it may also draw us inexorably into a variation of the same unenviable position in Vietnam that was formerly occupied by the French.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you can substitute all this stuff, whether it's the French or the Russians,
mm-hmm.
or the Viet Cong and the Taliban,
mm-hmm.
you can substitute it. It is exactly... When I heard that speech in Norway or Sweden, wherever he was, it was Nixon in my mind. It was Johnson in my mind. It was Bush, Reagan. It was every single warmongering bastard I have lived under my entire life.
I hear you.
That is the speech I heard. And it was during that speech that I gave up. I give up on the Democratic Party. And like I've said before on your show, I was born a Democrat, and I thought I would die a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
After that speech and living through that first thing in my life, watching my generation die, I cannot watch this generation die under this guy. I can't.
Well, Steve, listen, man, I hear you as clearly as if we were identical twins. I'm right there with you. I get it. I'm not going to give up hope, but I'm going to give up any kind of hope that either of these two parties would do anything to make this country viable again. Steve, here come the commercials. Thanks a lot, man. Have a good weekend. We'll be right back. Before the hour, thanks to our crew,
Jesus Christ,
Military Affairs, Sharon Gordy, Economic Affairs, Bruce Enberg, Education Affairs, Kay Petrini, Ethics Advisors, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and the program's engineer and executive producer is Kathy Bay. I'll try to squeeze in another call or two, but I want to share this with you. You all know who Jonathan Turley is, distinguished law professor at George Washington University, I believe. You've seen him on television a lot, at least I have. He has a blog, jonathanturley.org, and he writes yesterday about an event in Brooklyn. You may or may not know, in Brooklyn there's a heavy Orthodox Jewish community, the Hasidim, the Hasidic Jews. And this is what Turley writes. There's an interesting controversy in Brooklyn after the city of New York yielded to the Hasidic community in sandblasting off bike lanes on streets in Brooklyn. The Hasidim, these Jewish folks went out and got rid of the bike lanes. Why? Well, Hasidic leaders complained that they're having trouble obeying their religious law forbidding them from staring at members of the opposite sex when you have women biking around in shorts. Now, let me digress from Turley's blog here. If you think it's only Christian fundamentalists and Muslim fundamentalists who are crazy, so are the Jewish fundamentalists. So are the Hindu fundamentalists. They're all mad. They're insane with their religious hog snot. Back to Turley. The Hasidic community has long viewed this enclave where they live in Brooklyn as their special area, even though other families and artists have moved in recently. That has caused trouble with something called the Shomrim Patrol. That's a Hasidic neighborhood watch group, kind of like any neighborhood watch group. The Shomrim recently apprehended two bicycling advocates who were repainting the lane that they, the Hasidim, had destroyed, and they called the police. No charges were filed, but the bikers were prevented from repainting the lane. Turley says, I find it incredible that the city would yield to such demands by a religious group to erase bike lanes. The Department of Transportation for the city spokesman said, quote, we will continue to work with any community on ways we can make changes to our streets without compromising safety, end quote. However, Turley writes, this is a religious-based objection to women who are not covered. Yet reports indicate that Mayor Bloomberg wanted to appease the Hasidic community before his recently closed election. Now, obviously, this happened a couple of months ago. Hasidic leaders say that the cyclists endanger families and children. However, this is not the view of the city in creating these lanes, and they're found in every major city. The real objection appears to be their lifestyle and the rigid religious beliefs of this sect. It is clearly improper to make a decision that uses city resources to enforce values of a single religious group. Oh, my God. Oh, close the bike lanes. Why? Because the way they dress. Don't look. I have to look. Why do you have to look? Because I see all that leg. But don't look. God gave me eyes. But don't look. Better idea. Erase the bike lanes. OMFG. I just, it never stops, does it? So don't think for a moment, Truth Seeker, that only Christian fundamentalists are absolutely obscenely insane. Here's an example of the Hasidim who are absolutely obscenely insane. John is in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on XM. Hey, John.
Another liberal suffering in Western Michigan, the belly of the Republican beast here, Mike. Here I am again.
Yeah, it is. You really...
Isn't it a trip, though? Erase those bike lanes so they won't look at women, and then they'll go craft a diamond necklace to sit on the cleavage of some Republican broad, you know? Give me a break. Anyways, a couple of points real quick. The expose on Obama's economic team by our buddy over at the Rolling Stone I found very disconcerting.
Yeah.
With Rubin and the whole inside baseball thing there is just real, real vulgar. But another thing I wanted to pass on or at least touch base this Blackwater thing because it's kind of regionally connected here with our buddy Eric Prince, if you know what I'm saying.
Right.
Why am I to, I'm sure there has been supportive special forces to help CIA operation, but when ever does a spy need security? I mean, if they're out doing covert operations, who do they need security from if they're sneaking around? You know, that's when they're saying they were just shooting their security. And plus, there's that movie with Al Pacino where he trains the kid to be in the CIA, and he said, we're just going to teach you how to lie. So anything they say is unbelievable. Am I wrong in that statement?
Well, no. I think you're absolutely right. Wait, I lost you there, John.
All right, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
I find the whole thing, you know, and then there was the article saying that, you know, Eric Prince came out with his thing with his a buddy the other day from Vanity Fair, just doing nothing more than setting up a defense for himself in the news.
Right. Well, you know that
future retribution that may come his way.
That's true. That article in Vanity Fair, I hope we can give it some attention next week. John, we're flat out of time. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Stick around if you're listening online. Bob Kincaid, Head on Radio, comes up. If you're listening online, comes up next. Rebroadcast of tonight's program. I'll see you Monday. All right. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Wait a minute. Have a great weekend, Kevin, Kenny, wherever you are. So